And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
I'll take that ribeye. I don't want the polenta, though. I want baked
potato. Well, our chef actually doesn't allow alterations.
What the hell are you talking about? I'm the customer. I'll tell you what's what.
How you doing tonight, sir?
All right.
Understand you don't want that polenta.
Hell no, I ain't never even heard of that.
No, but you've had grits, ain't you?
Damn right I have.
That's all it is. Polenta's fancy name for grits.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And these are slapping mama good grits right here. Right.
You're going to get them and you're going to beg me for more.
What
you going to do?
We'll see about that.
You been on the lake lately?
Yeah, went out there Sunday.
Yeah, anything biting?
I caught a couple small mouths.
I bet you have to. I bet you have.
So the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Wednesday, November 17th. I'm J.E. Skeets, and alongside me, as always, there he is, Tass Mellis.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, Tassie? Got my Top Shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-yo!
The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Our super producer, making the magic happen, J.D.
Hello.
And a special guest today, we're going to bring him in. He's a former professional basketball player. He hooped overseas in Germany, Spain, Israel. Before that, he had a fantastic career at Stanford University. Made first team All-Pac-10 as a junior. He's the son of former Wizards executive Ernie Grunfeld. And most importantly, if we're being honest here, he's the author of a brand new book, By the Grace of the Game, which drops on November 30th. That's coming up. That's right around the corner. Very excited to welcome here to No Dunks, Dan Grunfeld. What's up, Dan?
Guys, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
We really appreciate you jumping on. I thought at first, offline, that it was like super early where you were on the West Coast, but you're like, no, you're kicking it over here on the East Side right now, meeting with family, you said.
That's right, but I told you, even if I were on the West Coast, I would still be here. But yeah, I have.
Yeah, you said you would be up because you have a 2.5-year-old. So
fair, that's very fair. I would definitely be up, but I'd also be here.
I appreciate it.
Well, I read about your workouts in your book. You were up at 6 and 7 with Frank working out during your Stanford years.
Listen, that's what it takes, man. And, you know, it's funny because writing the book, I would get up early in the morning too. And like, you know, basketball, it prepares you for that, but nothing prepares you like having a kid. So now that I have a toddler at home, believe me, I'm up.
Yeah, you're up. Well, look, we're going to get to your book a little bit more. I got some great questions. I know Tass has had a chance to read it. But we thought we could talk a little hoops. Last night, we had a very exciting game, the first game on TNT. And in the end, it was a blowout. Steph Curry dropped a game-high 37 as the Warriors. I mean, they steamrolled Brooklyn and held KD to under 20 points. I'm sure you had a chance to watch the game, Dan. What did you think? Is this a finals preview, Warriors-Nets here? Or what are your takeaways?
Listen, it could be. I mean, the league has never been more wide open. I think it's great to see Golden State playing so well. You know, and to see Steph at 37, I mean, he hits 9 threes like it's nothing, you know. And so Jordan Poole has stepped up, you know, and with Draymond and Wiggins, they have nice balance. And so, I think they have a real shot in the West since it's so wide open. And, of course, you know, Brooklyn is always dangerous. You know, KD didn't have his best game last night, but listen, you got the two leading scorers in the league and KD and Steph going heads up. I mean, it's just awesome to watch.
You were a shooter, like I said, at Stanford and then playing professionally overseas. Is it even wild for you that someone was like on the fringe of even making it to the NBA? Like, honestly, you're one of the greatest shooters really in the world when you count all the people that are taking basketball shots. But then there is Curry at another level. Like, is it wild to someone even like you to watch what he can do, like you said, with the 9 threes?
It's not wild. It's unfathomable. I mean, like, you can't even wrap your head around it. The distance, right, off the dribble, off the move. You know, I mean, yeah, I could shoot the basketball, but I needed my hips squared, my legs right under me. I needed space. You know, this guy's off the dribble from 35 feet with the accuracy. I can't comprehend how someone could shoot the basketball that way. And by the way, on the other side of the floor last night with Kevin Durant, I mean, being that tall and his ability to shoot the basketball, too, is incredible. And they're doing it contested. So, yeah, like, even though I played at a high level, like, I marvel at the skills of these guys. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. Lee, what were your big takeaways there from the Warriors? Really crushing the Nets in the third quarters when they blew the doors off.
It was an incredible performance. Only 37 points for Steph. And, you know, it's like not his best game, not his biggest game. But just as far as the impact that he had on the game was just unbelievable. I mean, that 1 3-pointer that he hit over LaMarcus Aldridge, I mean, it's okay, LaMarcus is sort of towards the end of his career for sure here, but the way that Steph just kind of lined him up, everyone knew what was coming, he got it off, and he was halfway down the other end of the court before the ball had even gone through the hoop. Like, the confidence that he's playing with right now really makes you believe that. I think the Warriors probably are the favorite right now. It's very early, of course. I think Steph's the MVP favorite, but I think the Warriors are too, because it wasn't just that Steph had this enormous game. The ball movement was great. Andrew Wiggins had his 6-minute spurt there where he looked like an all-star as well, hitting a couple of 3-pointers. But to think this team's got Klay Thompson to come back as well, I think that's a pretty good bet here that the Warriors are going to go pretty far this season, because they just looked incredible. So I thought, you know, on the other side, I thought James Harden and Durant were okay, but Steph is just playing at that MVP sort of level that we've seen back in the 73-9 Warriors days. So I think it's a pretty scary prospect for the rest of the league right now, that I don't think there's a team playing better basketball than Golden State.
Yeah, the Warriors are looking like the title favorites. And at this point, Klay Thompson feels like gravy. It could be Lee Ellis gravy. It could be terrible gravy. But they look like the favorites right now, and they're going to be adding James Wiseman, their biggest big guy, who struggled last season, but at least will be a presence inside. And they're going to get something from Klay Thompson. Even if that's just catch and shoot, get your body under you, sort of jumpers, that's going to help. They look completely locked in because, you know, they're an awesome offensive team, as we know. They're first in defense right now. And Draymond was on another level last night in the second half against Durant. The Warriors basically stopped switching, and Draymond just took him out of the game. That's incredible stuff. You can tell he has the extra motivation, you know, as former teammates and now friends. So I thought that was awesome to be watching him really take on that challenge of saying, Kevin Durant, you're coming in here as an MVP candidate. I'm leaving here as a Defensive Player of the Year favorite, taking you out of the game.
Yeah. Draymond even looks amazing offensively. I mean, he looks spry and rejuvenated. And if he's talking trash to Kevin Durant, literally, Draymond Green is scoring, you know, close by Kevin Durant, coming back and talking smack to him. They are, as you said, on another level. It is pretty wild what Steve Kerr is getting out of Otto Porter and Gary Payton II and Bielitsa, and Jonathan Kuminga is coming in. He's comparing him to Kawhi Leonard in his first year with the Spurs. I mean, they can do absolutely no wrong. And Steph, quiet 37. Although what wasn't quiet was Barclays Center cheering MVP for the guy on the road. Actually, that made me think of a question that we got earlier this season that you can answer, Dan, being a guy that hung out in MSG as a kid because Pops was an executive there. He played for them even earlier. We had this question from a fan who could only attend one game in New York. He could either go see a poor opponent come visit Madison Square Garden in the Knicks, or he could go see Kevin Durant. Now, what would you select as your game if you were him?
I'm admittedly biased, but 10 times out of 10, I'm going to Madison Square Garden. And
That's the answer.
I love Kevin Durant, right? One of my favorite players, such an amazing talent. But, dude, like, walking into the Garden to see basketball being played, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And so, yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong either way, but I'm at MSG.
Yeah.
You said, like, it's in the walls, right? Like,
and,
you know.
So as a fan, you can feel it. And when my dad and I go see a game in MSG, even to this day, we always at halftime walk around the concourse and just feel it. And, you know, you just feel the energy there. I also had the opportunity to play in Madison Square Garden. That's a whole different thing, right? When you take that floor and the rafters, I mean, it really takes over you. And you see, like, in the NBA, these great players having great performances at the Garden. That's why. You know, the energy, it charges you. You know, there's nothing like it.
Yeah. What
about the extra?
Go ahead, Lee.
Well, the extra layer of pressure that adds, because this season so far, the Knicks have actually been a better team on the road than they have been at home. And, you know, if you look at them play, they, to me, look like they're a little bit tighter at home because there is so much expectation. Of course, that first game of the season, the double overtime bing-bonger against the Boston Celtics where, you know, the Knicks are like, right, we're going to win the championship. But you look in the rafters and you see the Patrick Ewing and the Clyde Frazier and those sort of names and legends and history. So what sort of pressure does it add to, you know, guys like Julius Randle, how the expectation is now that you have to sort of meet a certain standard when you're in the Garden?
There's definitely pressure playing in New York City. There's no doubt about it, and especially if you've never done it. if the team's not doing well, you know, that and that pressure mounts. But there's another side to that coin where when it is going well and when it does click, there's nothing like it. You know, so it's kind of it's an extreme experience to play for the Knicks. You know, because if you're doing poorly, yeah, you're going to feel it. But yeah. If you're doing well, I mean, the roof is going to come off the place with the energy. You know, and I think that's what New York loves so much about a winner and a basketball winner is that, you know, people take that challenge. They want that pressure because when they live up to it, there's nothing like it.
Yeah. Tass, did you bring that up? Because I know I saw a lot of like Twitter hate for the Barclays Center, even for Nets fans, to allow that to happen, I guess, so to speak, last night, where people are chanting for the opposition in Curry. Is that why you sort of got into that? Because, you know, do you think there's some truth to it? Like, it's always going to be a Knicks town. Sorry, Nets. Doesn't matter if you got KD, Harden, and, you know, you do have Kyrie on your roster. What do you think?
Yeah, it's always going to be a Knicks town, but I didn't think it was going to be a Warriors town. I mean, that's a whole other thing.
Why? Yeah.
That surprised me. We've watched a lot of games in Barclays Center. I can't really recall a huge opponent contingent like really getting on the opponent. I don't remember it.
Well, that's the power of Steph Curry, if we're being honest. I mean, Lee, if you were at the Barclays Center last night, I know you would be chanting MVP for Steph Curry.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right.
But that's the thing. I think, you know, Brooklyn is still relatively new to the NBA because they were New Jersey for so long. And it's, I guess it's, what, 10 seasons now there in Brooklyn? And there has been criticism of, like, the fans who, you know, they don't even sell out a lot of games there, so they haven't still established that base. But you certainly can't compare, I don't think, Brooklyn's history to, you know, the New York Knicks. I mean, Madison Square Garden there. Although Kobe, remember when Kobe put up 60 in Madison Square Garden? I'm pretty sure they were chanting MVP and they were giving him a standing ovation there. That wouldn't happen. I mean, Kobe's obviously at a different level. There's not many guys at that level, but it can happen in arenas when you are just seeing one of the greatest entertainers put on a fantastic show.
Yeah, well, you brought up, like, the greats. We had a question the other day, Dan, about the idea of whether or not, like, Curry and KD at this point in their careers, I mean, like, they're already among the greats, don't get us wrong, but, like, they could be still battling for their position, be it top 10, top 5 even. The idea being, like, oh, could they win another title? Could they win another MVP in both of their cases? I don't know if you have a take on that. I don't need you to give me your top 10 list right now, but do you think that's sort of still playing out? Because LeBron's legacy is basically cemented, where these two guys, it feels like there's still some huge accolades or titles coming their way.
I think when you get to that level, you're always trying to do more. You know, so I think it's safe to say that Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are two of the all-time greats ever to play basketball. Mm-hmm. But you could always take that step. And even in the case of LeBron, the discussion between him and MJ is still ongoing, right? So, you know, until you reach, when you're that great, until you reach the undisputed number one spot, which really only one person has done in the history of our game, you know, there's still something to play for and more legacy to cement. I think for Durant and Steph Curry, certainly. I mean, more championships, more accolades, more MVP awards. Listen, I've already said about both of those. I love them so much. And one thing I want to note about them that I don't think gets enough kind of praise is how versatile they both are. We talked about their shooting ability. They're such amazing scorers. But you look at KD, he's going to get you 8 boards and 5 assists, and Steph's going to get you 6.5 and 6, you know? So, I mean, they're just across the board, they're so phenomenal, and they are all-time greats. But I think that, you know, there's still more story to be written.
Sticking quickly with this MSG New York thing, because I'm curious what you would consider your best basketball moment. I know there's a lot of them, and just to take people through a few of them, you had some great moments at Stanford. You had a 45-point night to convince the scouts to get you an invite to Stanford. You had some great moments overseas, but you also were within one game of making the Knicks. You were in their camp, and you made it to the last preseason game before you got cut, even if you didn't make the team. Is that your best basketball moment? I'm curious, just because you know, you got to put on the Knicks uni for a training camp?
Yeah, you know, like you said, I had a lot of great moments. I had also a lot of hard moments, too. That's what a basketball career is all about. I'll tell you what my best moment is. Like, if I think about it, if I could go back and do one of those moments over again, it actually wasn't about me. It was a team moment. You know, when I was playing at Stanford my sophomore year, we were the number 2 team in the country at that point in time. We were 19-0, and we were playing Arizona at home. And so this was 2004. Their starting lineup was Mustafa Shakur, Salim Stoudemire, Andre Iguodala, Hassan Adams, and Channing Frye, right? So these are five NBA players. I mean, you know, Stanford, we had one NBA player, Josh Childress, and a lot of really good players, but we were still the number two team in the country. We beat them on a 35-foot three-pointer at the buzzer on ABC with Tiger Woods sitting courtside, and it happened to be my birthday. You know, so it was, I mean, like I've never felt like flying on air for a day like we did then, because we went to 20-0. We became the number one team in the country a week later when Duke lost. And, you know, I was so close with my teammates, and I actually wasn't playing very well at all at the time. I think I played like 5 minutes that game. I don't think I scored a bucket, but if I could go back and do any moment over again, that like team moment of winning a huge game at home on a buzzer beater just so happens to be your birthday. Man, it was the best.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty damn good right there. I'm curious, Dan, do you have a favorite NBA team? Because, you know, like Tass said, your father played for the Knicks. He was an executive with the Wizards. You're a West Coast guy now. Like, do you have a team that you sort of like zero in on and try and watch a lot of the games? Or are you just a fan? Like, are you a Lee Ellis about it and just a fan of the game here?
I'm a free agent. You know, I'm up for grabs. Listen, I love the game. There are teams that I root for, that I have friends, you know, who work there, that I just enjoy watching. So, but ultimately, I just love watching the game, you know, and I think I'll always be a Knicks fan in some way, because that's kind of like the roots of my family is really with the Knicks. And I love, like, to our point about Madison Square Garden and that conversation, it's so fun when they're playing well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much energy. It's great for the league. But I don't have one team that I particularly root for right now. I root for a lot of teams, a lot of players.
Are you happy about the Wizards' hot start there in Washington, though, again, with your dad having been an exec for a long time?
Oh, absolutely. I have a lot of very good friends at the organization. Wes Unseld Jr. is a very close friend. It's great. I have a lot of fond feelings for that community. So to see them playing great basketball and things clicking is awesome. It's really fun to watch.
Dan, you know, sorry, Skeets, you were really close there, you know, to realizing a childhood dream to play for the Knicks. Was there a point, you know, after you got cut, you're looking around the league going, I'm better than that guy. There's no way that guy should be in the league ahead of me. I mean, there must have been a few of those guys. So you can spill the juice a bit here. Tell us a couple of those guys.
Yeah, well, first of all, you always think that as a competitor, as you should. You know, I always like, if I, you know, when you play with guys and they have some rough edges and they have an attitude, and that's a good thing, because you don't succeed as a basketball player without that. So that's all to say that, like, yes, I felt that way. I honestly don't recall the specific people, nor do I want to.
Come on, Dan, give us some. Start it up.
Dude, I'm not a shade thrower, but I will say to you, listen, if you make the NBA, you deserve to be in the NBA. I really believe that, you know, because it's so hard and it's so competitive, and that margin of error is so slim. So as fans, you might look at people on the end of a bench and say, oh, how's that guy in the league? Or how's that guy in the league? But I'll tell you, as someone who's been very close and been in, if they're on that bench, they deserve to be on that bench, because, man, it is hard to get there. So there were always, you know, you always think you're better than you are. I was certainly guilty of that. So you think you should be there too. But I always did have a lot of respect for guys who wore the jersey, because it's like, you earned it. If you're there, you earned it.
And I mean, Brian Scalabrini's kind of talked a lot about that, because people look at him as the sort of the victory cigar, you know, he'd come out on the court when the game is over. But, you know, and kids on Twitter and high school would say, I could beat Brian Scalabrine, but when you actually get to up against a guy like Brian, no regular dude can even hold a candle to Brian Scalabrine. He's closer to Michael Jordan than any of us are to making the NBA, to making Brian Scalabrine's level, you know? I mean, that's the thing.
Oh, my God.
I think that's the thing. It is, like, we sit back, we watch TV, and you see, like, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, and then you see a Scalabrine, and you think, well, I could maybe take Scalabrine's spot, but no way. I mean, he's an incredible athlete, one of the, you know, in the tiniest percentage of athletes in the world.
I mean, I would say Brian Scalabrine is playing a different sport than the people who think they could compete with him. And that's quite literally the truth. When you do it day in and day out at the highest level, the level of preparation you need and how competitive it is, like, it's not even really possible to understand what Brian Scalabrine is capable of doing on a basketball court unless you've kind of been in that arena with him. And there was that great video that came out recently of him playing we'll call it a civilian. That's what's going to happen.
I don't know, Lee. I still like your chances to get a couple threes off on Brian Scalabrine. Make it close at the very least.
You got to beat Dan first, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You might have a chance at that nowadays. If you see me move recently, you might have a chance.
Oh, we can make that. If you guys are, you're both shooting in your glasses. If you guys have a 3-point guard, I do want that. We got to keep it fair.
Go ahead, Dan. I'm curious. I've heard guys look back at their surgeries and think, you know, if it was today, I would have recuperated a lot faster just because of modern medicine. Like Dwayne Wade commented on that when he was at Marquette. The way his meniscus surgery went, he thought he would be a lot better off today. Now, you were on your way to an NBA career. You're ready to be a draft pick, but then you had that ACL injury in your junior year, had to undergo surgery, obviously fought back to go overseas and to play. Do you consider that a possibility when you look back at that injury? Would it have been different if it was today?
I do, which first of all makes you feel old. Right, because you never thought you'd be the person that talks about like the, you know, medical advancements, but it's so true. Because and it's funny, my dad and I were talking about it recently because I was mentioning Kevin Durant. I said it's like the Achilles never happened. You know, look at this guy. And part of it is what a sensational athlete he is. But my dad and I talked about it. Part of it are those advancements. And so yeah, listen, it took me 8 months to just play again. You know, and then I probably wasn't right until another year and a half. And you know, when you're 21 years old and really making your rise in basketball, to take that big of a step back, particularly for someone like myself. You know, I was kind of a borderline NBA player anyway. I didn't have so much of margin for error. So that it was certainly a tough injury. But yeah, I think if it happened today, things might have been a little different.
The other games from last night, just to throw them in here, Bogdanović scored 27. The Jazz crushed the 76ers, who've now lost 5 in a row because they're shorthanded. They don't have a lot of their guys. And Paul George continued his hot start, 34 points in 34 minutes as the Clippers schooled the young Spurs 106-92. You can either touch on those games if you want to, Dan, but my question is, what team has been the most surprising to you after, you know, 15 or so games into the season? Is there a squad where you're like, wow, they are a lot better than I thought they maybe were going to be?
I thought the Bulls would be competitive, but it's been really fun to see how good they've been. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that back, you know, you never know how things are going to fit. And I've been on teams like that where on paper you think things are going to work and then it just doesn't happen, and vice versa. You don't think that things will be good and then it happens for you. That backcourt, you know, when you look at those three guys, right? Alonzo, DeRozan, and LaVine. I mean, what, DeRozan's like third in the league in scoring. LaVine is seventh. You know, you have Alonzo doing the little things, distributing, also scoring. You know, so that combination has just been so potent. And listen, I grew up, you know, my dad was working for the Knicks, so I love that team, but they were playing the Bulls. They were playing Michael Jordan. You know, I saw those games in the United Center. It's fun to see the Bulls do well also. And so that's probably been my biggest surprise, and I'd call it a pleasant surprise because I like watching them.
Yeah, Dan, you mentioned earlier that it's better for the league when the Knicks are doing well, but I think it's best for the league when the Knicks and Bulls are both doing well to get these, you know, the East Coast and the Midwest completely energized here. It's been a fun start to the season, no doubt, for the Bulls. But are we being a little biased here, saying it's better when all these 90s teams are really good, or is this just because we're old guys?
Probably both.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
We had some, I don't know, I don't want to call it like a clickbaity headline here, but I want to get your take, Dan, and everybody else here, especially in the stream team. Giannis has this GQ feature interview. He's got incredible photos, by the way. I mean, just the bling on this guy's like a model in addition to being an MVP. But he said, I mean, this has got pulled out of this interview. Giannis said there's a possibility that he could leave Milwaukee in the future and embrace a new challenge somewhere else. I'll quote him here. Me and my family chose to stay in this city, Milwaukee, that we all love and has taken care of us for now. In 2 years, that might change. I'm being totally honest with you. I'm always honest. I love this city. I love this community. I want to help as much as possible. So some Bucks fans going, uh-oh, he's already telling us he might be leaving. But what was your reaction to this headline and to these like sort of quotes, Dan?
Well, first of all, I have deep family roots in Milwaukee. That's where my mom is from. That's where my dad played for the Bucks and was a GM. I went to high school there. So I love the city of Milwaukee. Listen, nowadays, right, guys keep their options open. So I look at it as just someone who he's obviously shown his commitment to the city, not only in staying there, but bringing them a championship, you know, just being committed to every aspect of the city of Milwaukee. So I think he has walked the walk. But at the same time, he's a global brand. He's an icon. Now he's a champion. I think it's probably the type of thing where he just wants to, you know, keep his options open and be candid with that community. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't read too much into it. I wouldn't start panicking. I think, listen, if they keep winning, he's going to stay, right? So it's kind of incumbent upon the Bucks to keep him, keep winning championships. And they're an amazing organization. But definitely will make headlines, right? Because when you hear one of the best players in the world say that, yeah, it's going to raise eyebrows.
Yeah, I loved, like, I guess it was his agent Tass, Giannis' agent, saying, you know, like, the challenge he's talking about is repeating. And then, you know, he's a young guy and he's won a lot. He's just trying to find these new things to keep him engaged. It's not like he's saying, I'm going to the Knicks in 2 years. See you later. Though Knicks fans will tell you that's exactly what's happening here, Tass. But,
well, Dan, I thought of you while reading your book and thinking about Giannis. Giannis said he was alone when he was 18 years old in Milwaukee, and you felt the same way reading your book when Pops was working for the Bucks, and you really didn't have friends. You're kind of in loner mode there. Do you feel like you're Giannis Antetokounmpo? You got like a kindred spirit there?
Listen, I'll take the comparison for sure. It probably ends there at the loner who didn't have many friends to start. But no, it's true. Listen, my dad, you know, became the general manager of the Milwaukee Bucks when I was a sophomore in high school, and I moved to Milwaukee from Northern New Jersey the day before my high school year started. So I just, you know, you leave all your friends, you live in a new place, and my grandparents were living in Milwaukee. So it's not that I didn't know anyone, but I didn't have really a community or a group of friends. And as you know, I write in the book about some of the things I did to keep myself occupied, you know, with card tricks to myself and different things, just because you don't have a community yet. So I know that feeling.
So you're more Thanasis rather than Giannis, then, sort of.
We can keep going. There are five brothers, man. We can keep going.
Keep going lower.
You got Francis, Alex.
Yeah, hold on. You were doing card tricks? Like, you were doing magic? You taught yourself magic?
Yeah, I'm serious. Like, think about it. When you're like 15, you're in a new city. It was before, again, talk about being old. It was before really cell phones and texting. Yeah. So I'm just kind of chilling, like, okay. I was like, let me go on the internet, which I just barely had. You know, it was like dial-up. I was learning new card tricks and practicing them for myself. I mean, I literally did that for like, listen, I'm not trying to paint like a sorrow story. I made a lot of friends. I had a great experience there. But for the first several weeks, I did have that kind of loneliness. And, you know, it was hard, but we got through it.
Right. All right. It's crazy. Unfortunate news out of Cleveland yesterday. Mobley is going to miss the next 2 to 4 weeks, they're saying, with a right elbow strain. This Cavs rookie has played great. I'm sure you would agree, Dan. Basically 15-8, 2.5 assists as well, over a block and a half in 33 minutes per game. Probably the leading candidate for Rookie of the Year, like, early in the season here. Along with Mobley, are there any other rookies that have really impressed you? Or what are your thoughts on this draft class in general?
Yeah, I mean, Mobley has been the guy. And not only have I been impressed, but he's the one who people are texting me about. You know, I mean, early, my dad sent me a text. He goes, watch Mobley. You know, there's...
Wow, oh, yeah. Really?
Very early. He said he's the real deal. And I have a very good friend who's a big Cavs fan. He texts me all the time about Mobley. So he's actually been the guy I've been most focused on. I'm interested to see Cade Cunningham kind of get his legs under him, get acclimated a little. I really liked him in college. I think, you know, he can really create. And so I know it's kind of been up and down. And it's hard when you start your career not 100% healthy. You know, so I'm interested to kind of give him a little bit more time to see how he develops. I really, really liked him coming out of college.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a fun little race here for Rookie of the Year. It's unfortunate that Mobley's going to miss some time, but in a weird way, Lee, it almost allows some of these other guys to catch up a little bit, and hopefully he comes back fully healthy, Mobley does, and we have, like, between Barnes and Cade and maybe Jalen and so on, Franz Wagner, a couple other guys, we get quite the race here. But, you know, bummer news for Cleveland, especially for Tass Mellis, the biggest Cavs fan I know. He's always texting me about the Cavs. but it sucks that he's going to miss some time here so early in his career.
Yeah, he has been probably better than I think we expected at this point, because those early comparisons, you know, like Kevin Garnett, Chris Bosh, is like, those are Hall of Fame talents. But Mobley has certainly shown that he looks ready for the NBA. You know, he's still a thin, young kid. He's got some filling out to do with his body, but that hasn't really impacted his game so far. He's been good on both ends of the floor, and even knocking down a couple of three-pointers as well. That's not his strength, but certainly he's shown that he's trying to add that to his game as well. So it is a bummer, because the Cavs have been one of the best stories this season. Fun team to watch, and they've been winning, and they've probably got the Rookie of the Year still. So hopefully he does come back in a couple of weeks' time and doesn't miss out on too much here.
Dan, you said your dad texted you ahead of time to let you know that Mobley was going to be a really solid player. Was there ever a time that you got to tell your dad, I told you so, I knew this guy was going to be awesome, or a move he made where you're like, I'm not so sure?
Yes, there is one instance. It was the former, not the latter. And he'll still bring this up sometimes. I was playing overseas, but I would come back to D.C. for the summers, and I would – you know, be working out where the Wizards played. And so I would attend some of the pre-draft workouts. And I've been doing that since I was a kid. I saw Kobe's pre-draft workout for the Knicks in 96. You know, I saw I saw Rick Fox work out for the Knicks. And I don't even remember when that was, but I was very little. But I happened to be at Chandler Parsons' workout. And I was just very, very high on him. And I kept telling my dad, man, he's good. And I'd seen him play at Florida, and he really knew how to play. I knew he was a coach's son. He had a great feel. And I was just, my dad would tell you, like, I was super high on Chandler Parsons. And, you know, he was a second-round pick. But obviously he turned out to be, like, a max player at one point and had a really good NBA career. So my dad will give me credit. He'll be like, yeah, he calls me Danny. You know, like, Danny saw that one. Danny saw that one.
I love it. Well, before we let you go, you know, talk to us a little bit about the new book here. Like, where did this idea come to write this, and like, even give us, you know, people here in the stream team and listening and watching later, like the elevator pitch. What is this book about? Why should people go grab it?
Absolutely. So, I mean, basketball fans know my dad, Ernie Grunfeld, as a player, as a longtime executive. Few people know that he's the only player in NBA history whose parents survived the Holocaust. And so that's my grandparents. Both my grandparents are Holocaust survivors. You'll all be happy to know my grandmother's 96 years old, lives in the Bay Area, 25 minutes from me and my wife, is doing amazing.
Wow.
But she, you know, she lost 7 immediate family members in the Holocaust. They were all killed. And so, yeah, my dad never had grandparents. And so, you know, this is kind of an unknown story of someone who, you know, came to America when he was 9 years old, didn't speak a word of English, had never touched a basketball, and then he was a gold medalist for the United States of America 10 years later. So it's really an American dream story, and certainly, you know, basketball has been the vehicle for our family. And so really, this is not a book about my dad. This is a book about our family, you know, and what happened to my grandparents in the war, my journey with basketball. And then, you know, my dad was really the connector, and the game of basketball is what, you know, took my family to places we couldn't have imagined. So, you know, it's really an honor of my life to tell it, because it is, you know, it's a basketball story that's bigger than basketball.
Some incredible stories from your father's side of things about growing up, about his years as an executive with all those teams we've mentioned, seeing Charles Oakley punch somebody in the face on an airplane. some real incredible stuff in there. Do you mind sharing the Larry Bird story from the book? Because it's a special one.
It is special. And thank you for bringing that up. Now, listen, I'll give you some context, right? So there's a lot of difficult things in my book and in my family story. You know, and my dad, when he came to America, his older brother was diagnosed with leukemia and died a year later. So there's a lot of like heavy stuff, but there's also a lot of laughter, levity, and joy. And what I really learned from my grandma is that's what life is like. You know, there's two sides to that coin. And so I wanted to reflect that. And so the story we're talking about here is a Larry Bird story. And I won't give you... I'll give you a Cliff Notes version. Hopefully you'll pick up the book and read the rest. But I grew up loving Larry Bird, as most, you know, kids who grew up in my era, the 80s and 90s, did. And I was playing summer league for the Indiana Pacers after Stanford. And Larry Bird was the general manager. And I had the opportunity to eat dinner with him, which I thought was going to be a big dinner with the whole team. And it was just 4 people. So I was very, very nervous and excited. And I was drinking water like my life depended on it, but I would not, you know, because I'm with Larry Bird, right? I mean, let's like realize this. I'm with Larry Bird. I'm pounding water, and I after a while, had to go to the bathroom pretty bad, but I am not getting up from the table when I'm with Larry Bird, right? Who does that? You know what I mean? So, listen, there were opportunities where I probably should have or definitely could have. I didn't. One thing led to another. I got in a little bit of a tough situation there. let's just cut this version of the story here, but pick up the book. You can hear the rest of it. But but listen, like these are the things that happen in a basketball career in life, you know, the good and the bad. And so just tried to tell it all in this book.
Yeah, incredible detail from your family's perspective, from your grandmother, who's alive and kicking, as you said, 96 years old, and from Pops and from yourself. So it was a great read. It really... really appreciate you writing it, and it was really, really pleasurable reading it. Everybody should pick up By the Grace of the Game.
That's right. Drops on November 30th. You can pre-order it now. I definitely saw that available over on Amazon. So, Dan, thanks so much for jumping on here. It was fun to talk about the hoops last night and what's going on in the league, and, of course, you know, the idea behind your book. Really appreciate you jumping on here with us.
Guys, thanks so much. It was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
All right, everybody, go grab that book, By the Grace of the Game. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, I'm going to tell you my top 10 most disappointing players from this season. We're going to upset a whole bunch of people, so don't go anywhere. Thanks, Dan.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, welcome back to No Dunks here on a Wednesday. Guys, we're about a month into the 21-22 NBA season, which means we have a pretty good sample size when it comes to some guys who have gotten off to disappointing starts. Because that's the truth, Lee. Expectations, they're a part of the game. But some players, right now, have fallen short in fulfilling them. So, I'm going to hit you with my top 10 most disappointing players this season so far. So, a few notes, guys. First off, okay, I'm not saying these players suck ass and that they'll never be good again, all right? I'm doing the opposite. I'm likely saying rough starts, they'll probably get it going. Secondly, I tried to mix up my list with young players who were pegged to have breakout seasons, and that got off to a rough go. Gunners, maybe, for whatever reason, that can't hit the target. And then some underwhelming starts from some struggling all-stars. And finally, I said this yesterday, I'm only going to include players that are actually playing. Am I disappointed Kyrie won't get the vaccine? Yeah. And that he's not playing? Yes. I love watching him play. Am I disappointed Ben Simmons is not mentally right to play, and the whole thing with the Sixers organization and sort of the pissing contest between Morey and Simmons camp? Yeah, I'm disappointed in that. Am I disappointed Zion Williamson isn't playing? Of course I am. But for the sake of this list, we're going to exclude them, okay? It's guys that, for the most part, were playing. There are a few sort of injury exceptions in here that recently they've left, okay? Yeah. Makes sense. I will go through my list. If you have concerns or questions, you know, jump in here. The first one, at number 10 on my most disappointing player so far, I went with a second-year player, which is definitely the only second-year player I have on my list. He's only 20 years old, for crying out loud. But I'm going with Killian Hayes, because he struggled in his rookie season, and he only played in 26 games last year. And I will say he's shown some improvements this year. That makes sense. Again, he's got less than 40 games under his belt. He's not turning the ball over as much. He's knocking down his threes at a decent clip. He doesn't take a lot of them, but at 38%. But Killian Hayes, he's averaging 6 points per game while shooting 30% from the field. And he just struggles to score in and around the paint. He is shooting 13% from 3 to 10 feet. That's crazy. So it's just sort of wild. I still have hope in him. Again, I want to make that very clear that I really think he could turn into like a very poor man's version of like Alonzo Ball or something like that. He's only 20. He's barely played. But I thought he would come out after the injury of last year. I thought he would be a little more impressively to start this season. So that's why I have him here. Again, it's a bit of a weird one with a second-year player, but it's just like, it's not amazing offensively. There's some improvements.
No, I mean, when you're the seventh pick on a bad team, you know, you expect to see sort of an impact. But again, it does come back to just he can't get out on the court and stay out there, which is what we need to see is 35-game stretch where he's playing every night, and maybe there'll be some improvement there. But, he certainly hasn't lived up to that billing yet of being a seventh overall pick in the draft.
Okay.
So, well, this is what I think. Skeets, you be Killian. I understand what you're watching him play. The predicament that Dwayne Casey now has is let Killian Hayes run the offense or give it to Cade. I think that's what
ain't no debate
has to happen.
Yeah, no debate. Cade is turning it on, and Killian Hayes, I think, is going to perhaps be best served as a backup long-term for the Pistons.
It's possible. Okay, at number nine, we got a star player here. A lot of people figured he'd be on this list. Bradley Beal. Now, I have him sort of low on my list here because they are doing well. The Wizards, you know, as we talked about there with Dan, I mean, they're at the top of the East. They're doing it without him or even when he was in there and struggling. But Beal's played in 10 games, Lee. 23-6-6, so you're like, okay, you know, you round up a little bit. Those are good numbers. But he's shooting sub 41% from the floor, an eye-opening 25% from three on nearly 6.5 attempts per game. And yes, he has excuses. He had the left hamstring issues. Personal reasons, he's left the team over the last couple to mourn the death of his grandmother. But it's just weird to see a guy that's, you know, just a bucket that has always been pretty damn consistent just struggle so much. And it's even weirder that they're winning. I mean, I guess that's the great thing for Wizards fans, as we talked about. Like, wow, if this guy suddenly unlocks his potential that we know he can, that the levels that we know he can reach, then Jesus, the sky might be the limit for this Wizards team. But it's weird. He's had a rough start.
Yeah, you might see the red flag emoji if they were losing, if they were 3-10 instead, where it might be
you
like,
would be
all
on
right,
here every day him, saying, trade Bradley Beal, trade Bradley Beal.
But the fact is, the Wizards are better, so I think they'll take this sort of you know, offset at the moment, where it's like, okay, Beal will probably get better as the season goes on and as he feels healthier in those legs. But for now, we're winning. We're not relying heavily on him, and certainly they're playing a better style than they played last year when it was just he and Westbrook basically going out there and doing everything. Now they've got contributors across the board there. So I think the Wizards are probably okay with it right now.
At number eight on my list, I had to have a Raptor player, Tess.
Mm,
there was a couple to pick from. But I went with Precious Achiuwa, who is the starting center for the Raps. He came over in the Lowry sign and trade with Dragic. He does some things very well. He takes care of the glass. He plays hard on defense. Unfortunately, if you've watched Raptors games, this guy thinks he's Draymond Green in transition, and he is not. That he is not. It's just weird. He's like, he's somehow this incredible 6'8" super athlete that is somehow shooting under 35% from the floor. That's really weird. Those are the type of numbers you see from a guard sometimes that can't hit a shot because they're working from the perimeter and it just won't drop. It's another thing to see it from a big guy at 35%. And I think I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I was very high on him. You know, for the Raptors of getting him for quote-unquote nothing. You know, you're going to lose Lowry. You do the sign and trade. Oh, wow, young piece and precious. And Kem Birch has, like, outplayed him significantly this year. I don't know if you have thoughts on Precious. I know a lot of people are like, what about Chris Boucher too? Yeah, you could throw him in there too as well.
I think Precious is one of those guys for me that kind of talked his reputation into existence on social media when he blocked Kevin Durant in a pre-Olympics game. He was playing for Nigeria while KD obviously playing for USA, and he put it on Instagram, and he was showing the world that he was able to block one of the best players in the world. He reeled me in. Of course you trade for this guy. The confidence on this guy, and it's killing him a little bit because he's a little too overconfident. He's doing a little too much on the floor.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's, you know, Beal's obviously a different stratosphere of player, but I can take the lumps watching this team, them being 7-8 when they had an over-under number of 35.5 wins to start the season. I'm okay with it because you just want to see what he is. I know some experts like John Hollinger said, why the heck are you trading Kyle Lowry for Precious Achiuwa and Goran Dragic when you could just use that money to sign somebody else as part of your salary cap? Mm-hmm. Sometimes I watch that and I think, yeah, you're right. But if you can reel him in, if you can be Trey Kirby on the water and you can reel him in a little bit, why can't he be a contributor? That's extremely solid on both ends. It's just the overconfidence is and a little too much leash right now. I think Nurse knows what he's doing, though. I assume, you know, make your mistakes now while we don't have the crazy expectations, and we'll figure it out a little bit later.
Yeah, again, I just want to make it clear, I'm not saying trade these guys, get them out of the league. I'm just saying they've disappointed so far, Trey. I don't think it's crazy to say Precious is on the list.
I think you're exactly right. He just needs a little bit of a recalibration, I think. He's shooting 44% from 0 to 3 feet. That doesn't make sense. He should be living in the lane, but also shooting 18% from three. And Precious Achiuwa is the player who drives me most crazy because when the Bulls played the Raptors, he hit a three-pointer and he got Nikola Vucevic in the air on a pump fake for a three-pointer.
Right.
I'm like, he's made three three-pointers the entire season. I remember two of these serious moments, but he still wants to take them. I know he's not a huge guy for a center. He's only listed at 6'8", but he is a good athlete, and he should be in the lane more often than he should be outside of the lane.
Yeah, and like all these guys on this list, I'm sure he will figure it out. Give him more opportunity there with the Raps. Okay, number seven. I'll admit this guy sort of went under the radar for me, so shout out to somebody who suggested this name on Twitter because I did a little crowdsourcing for most disappointing players. Jordan Clarkson. Reigning sixth man of the year. He's nicknamed the flamethrower, which I didn't know about. Saw that on Basketball Reference. I was like, what does anybody call that? But okay. Yeah.
Cool.
He is just struggling to be that instant offense this year. He's shooting 36% on about 15 shots per game in just 25 minutes because he comes, you know, comes off the bench, Lee. His role is to let it fire away. And he's not doing all that well at that particular skill set this year. He's only hit 34 three-pointers this season on 136 attempts. That's 25% from deep. And that becomes a real problem when nearly 65% of your shot attempts are from three. I mean, that's all he does, and he'll get it going. He's had a couple good games. He played okay last night, I'd say, in the win over the Sixers. But I just kept thinking Joe Ingles was the one off the Jazz bench having, like, a really quiet year. I said that to you, I remember, Lee, at one point earlier in the year. And, you know, again, I really did a little deep dive on Clarkson going, oh, yeah, he's just – He's really taking this Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford role to heart, right? It's like you're going to have monster games and you're going to have some stretches where you just can't hit a shot. Yeah.
He's looking like a J.R. Smith right now where his game hasn't really changed from last season. He's playing that same role in the same way. It's just
but that's
the
fine.
Ball. Yeah, exactly. Because he is going to have a stretch where he probably catches fire you know, and really does win a few games. In fact, you could say he probably won the game for the Jazz here against Atlanta in that third quarter.
Yep.
He couldn't hit a shot in the first half. And then I think he finished with 22, I think it was. I can't quite remember. But that's the thing is he doesn't actually, his confidence doesn't wane. His shot selection doesn't wane. Nothing about his game really changes. It's just some days they go in, some days they don't. And those stretches can last for a few games. But he has been a little bit disappointing considering he is the reigning sixth man of the year.
Make it Wayne, Jordan.
Make it Wayne.
At number six on my list, I'm going Malik Beasley. Here's where I'm at with him. And I have a feeling Trey's going to agree with me.
Here we go.
The idea of Malik Beasley, a basketball player, is so much better than the reality of Malik Beasley, a basketball player. It just is. And I've been duped. Because I've thought many times, this guy's something special. You know, he's a classic 3-and-D guy. But is he? Because he can't really hit a three, and I think he's sort of overrated defensively. So I don't know what to make of him. Beasley's played in 37 games for the Wolves last season, and he was scoring, like, just a shade under 20 points per game. Okay, pretty good. And it got, like, to the point where I'm, like, talking myself out of, like, a D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley for, like, a Ben Simmons. You know, those trade rumors going around. Is that too much? Is Beasley too good? No! The answer is an emphatic no. I mean, the Wolves would do that in a heartbeat, that trade. The problem is I don't think the Sixers would. But Beasley is averaging 9 points per game. His shooting splits 32, 30, and 50.
50?
Yeah.
Not good at the line, huh?
No. I mean, he doesn't get there a lot. But, it's... you know, Trey, am I off there? I know you've talked about this with guys before. Like, we love the idea of this player. But sometimes the results don't back that up. Do you think that's true with Beasley, or am I being too harsh?
I think it's a little of both. The guy has shot the ball well in his career. He was 39% last year, 38 the year before, 40 before that, 38 for his career. That's three-point shooting, and we've seen him have some decent games for the Timberwolves, for the Nuggets in the past. But all things considered, I think he's just a guy. And, you know, just the guy whose nickname is the Mutant. Malik the Mutant. He's just a guy. There's a lot of players in the NBA who are just a guy, but sometimes you can talk yourself into being something more than a guy. Is it just a guy?
Okay.
Just a guy named Malik.
Anything to add on Beasley there, Tass? You think it's fair to include him on my top 10 list here? Disappointing so far?
It is, because you wrote him when he was on the Denver Nuggets. You thought that he was better than he was. Then he goes to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and he scores 20 points a freaking game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're allowed to talk about it. Maybe his role change from last year to this year has played a part. He was a starter, and now he's not. So that may have an effect as Chris Finch, head coach there, is trying to get more balance in their lineups. We have D'Angelo Russell. We have Karl Anthony Towns. And we have Anthony Edwards. Maybe we got to throw some D's in there, some defensive guys. So maybe that happened. He also was in jail for 2.5 months this past offseason. Maybe that had an effect on how he came into this season. So, maybe he's just not right. Maybe he wasn't training all that hard in prison. I'm not sure. So things aren't going too well for him. Yeah, I was excited about that as well. But, yeah, he's been a different player. I mean, he just looks like a different player. I know he's just a guy, as Trey said, but I don't know. A 20-point guy, maybe he can bounce back next season. I don't know if it's coming this season.
As Graham Barker says, he's just a guy standing in front of a girl trying to get her to call me the mutant. The mutant! Maybe mutate into a guy who can shoot the ball. Oh, got him!
Nice. Okay, has Malik Beasley been called the mutant more than Jordan Clarkson's been called the flamethrower?
Sounds like the worst Avengers that you could possibly make.
All right, well, we got another nickname here, sort of. Jaren Jackson Jr. is number 5 on my list of disappointing players. We were excited for Triple J, weren't we? Entering his 4th year in the league, he's finally healthy, he's on a talented young team, he's got an identified role, he's got a fat new $100 million extension. His preseason numbers. I saw tweets about his preseason numbers. Ready for the breakout, baby. Here we go. And after 14 games, offensively, because he's okay on the defensive end, offensively, it's a big meh for Jackson Jr. again. He's shooting the league average from deep, but just 38% overall, and he's a 7-footer. I think we were very excited. He'll probably get it going. The Grizzlies are okay. But Lee, I think we thought, okay, here we go. Here's going to be the leap from him. And offensively, again, I like what he does on the defensive end. Offensively, he just hasn't been able to score enough.
No, he hasn't. And the Grizzlies are crumbling. I think Zilla wrote in his morning newsletter this morning, because obviously Ja Morant has been incredible in the MVP conversation somewhat. But outside of him, they just don't have all that much. And Jaren Jackson, you're right, they gave him the big contract. They believe in him. But he's the most 6'3", 7-footer I think there's been in the NBA. He just does not play like... No, but I don't mean that as an insult, Lee?
How dare you say that? Because I was going to say he's the new Kristaps Porzingis. You beat me to it, because he's being a Porzingis out there. Often the biggest guy on the court for the Grizzlies, and he's getting 5.7 rebounds per game. He just hangs out on the perimeter and wants to shoot threes, and that's about it. I expected a lot more. The defense, I don't think, has been good enough to counteract how much of a step back he's taken on offense.
Yeah, and he's never been a great rebounder for his height, and I just wonder if that Grizzlies coaching staff needs to say to him, when you're that tall and athletic and long, get down, and you've got to be getting 8-9 rebounds a game. You just have to be. We need that from you, because their defense is atrocious, and a part of that is the rebounding. So, you know, if he's not going to really excel on the offensive end, then he needs to be able to do some more on the defensive end. Grizzlies season started off, I mean, it was, I fell in love with the Grizzlies. They were great, and they still are fun to watch with Morant. But I just don't think there's a whole lot of substance under what they've got there right now. They need to improve drastically, mostly on the defensive end.
All right, at number 4 on my list, getting into the real sort of borderline all-star type players or all-star type players. Hurts my heart to say this name, but De'Aaron Fox has been disappointing. And I love me some Kentucky guards. You guys know that, Booker and SGA and Tyler Hero and on and on and on. But
big college Fox, head right here.
Oh, huge college hoops head. I remember that game Dan was talking about, actually, that Stanford game. Star Fox. Last year, 25-7-4, and he had some brilliant individual moments on a shitty Kings team. But this year, Fox is averaging under 20 points per game. He's shooting 41% from the field and a WTF 23% from deep. Getting very concerned about the three-point shooting, because I think it was in his second year where he was like 37% from distance. Everyone was like, wow, that's great. Above average. That's awesome from your point guard. You know, being probably the fastest guy in the league, and you have a three-point shot that you have to respect as a defender, man, that's just going to allow him to blow by people even more. But since then, Lee, I don't have it in front of me, but I know it's fallen off a cliff, and he can't find it. So that's bad. His free throw attempts have dropped. The turnovers have ticked up a little bit. I just think when I watch him, he generally seems to be playing in a bit of a fog. He's had one monster game from what I can recall, and it was like in a 19-point loss to the Spurs. It's weird. I think he has one dunk this season. Like, it's just like there hasn't been a lot of Fox highlights and or great games, Tass. So, again, it hurts me to say it, but he's definitely on my top 10 most disappointing players this season so far.
It's a puzzle, this De'Aaron Fox start, because, I don't know, he would shoot himself out of this funk, you would think, but it just hasn't happened yet. When's it going to happen? It can't go away. It can't. He'll be back.
I don't think he's going to be able to shoot himself out of this one. The guy's a 70% free throw shooter. Yeah, that's not great for a guard. He was 32% from three last year, and that was an improvement from 29% the year before. Right now he's at 23%. We call him the fastest player in the league, and usually when you're the fastest player in the league, you're not the best shooter. That's been the case for John Wall. That's been the case for Russell Westbrook. There have been many players who come through, and we just say, oh, if they can get this jumper right with that speed, they're going to be unstoppable. But I don't foresee him suddenly developing a jumper.
Mm-hmm. All right. Go.
Oh, no, last season was the year where you thought, you know, the 25-8, there was all-star buzz. It's like, yeah, this guy has found it. And it doesn't appear to be the case. And I just want to refer back to the Sam Amick article yesterday in The Athletic, that the connection there between Fox and Halliburton appears to be problematic for Sacramento on top of everything else. And I think those are the two players that are the least likely to be traded from Sacramento. I think it's Buddy or Harrison Barnes first. So that presents another problem for Sacramento, is how do you figure out a way to get these guys working together? Because on paper and the eye test is like, this is a decent backcourt, but hasn't translated yet to on-court success. But Fox doesn't seem to have that same pep in his step this season that he's had in the past, where he's trying to initiate that offense and get it moving because he is so fast. But if he can't knock down that three consistently or get to the free throw line, then his offensive game isn't going to be able to flourish as the way it could be.
And number three on my list, Jason Tatum, Mr. 12-time. Probably got 12 times the amount of votes for most disappointing player on my informal Twitter poll. There was a lot of votes for Jason Tatum. I think it makes sense. This guy appeared headed for a seat at the MVP table after last year's performance and his career up to this point. And instead, he got lost on the way to the restaurant. Lee, did you not text him the directions or where we were sitting in the restaurant? Because he's not there. He really isn't. His shooting splits have cratered. Yeah, we're in the back, Jason! We're in the back corner. Yeah, no, don't worry. You got time. The pizza's going to be another 8 hours. But Tatum is shooting sub 39% from the floor, sub 32% from deep on 8 attempts per game. And he's even sort of struggling at the line for him. Sub 77% at the line, which is shockingly lower than his career numbers there. So that's weird. If you watch him, he is just trying to do too much in isolation. And the numbers back that up, Lee. I went and checked. He's putting up the lowest percentage of field goals assisted in his career, which to me, and you watch it, you know, it's a lot of like, I can get my shot, so don't worry about too much ball movement. I will maybe take a pick, and then I'll get the switch, and then I'll go to work, and I'll ISO, and I'll, more times than not, this year at least, take sort of a difficult shot and struggle it right now, because these are bad, bad shooting percentage for a guy that was an All-NBA guy 2 years ago, could have been it last year, has been an all-star, looks like a franchise guy, and is, don't get me wrong, but he's got off to a bad, bad start here to the season.
Yeah, I just don't like the construction of this roster in Boston either. I just think that part of the reason he has to do so much is because it's just weirdly built, you know, with Marcus Smart and Schroeder there as your backcourt. And then they've got Al Horford back, who's actually having a decent season, but it doesn't really seem to highlight Tatum skills as much. And of course Jaylen Brown is out as well, so that does add even more of a workload there to Tatum. I believe he will be much better than he's playing right now. He will shake it off, but his efficiency is down, and yeah, he does seem to be just having to do everything for Boston to get it, generate their offense. So I think he's better than that, but certainly to start the season he has been struggling.
At number two, I have Michael Porter Jr. here. Now, he's out for the foreseeable future with back injuries, and they may have played a part in his rough start. We're not 100% sure on that, but he played 9 games, after he signed on the dotted line, Trey, for a 5-year max contract extension that's going to pay him between $172 million and possibly $207 million, though that's looking less likely with being an incentive-based deal there. But he was a lot of people's pick for most improved player. A ton. And that made sense. After you saw what he did in the playoffs last year, he averaged like 17-6. You know, Jamal Murray's out. You think he's going to step up there, get more opportunity to play alongside Jokic. And, you know, you look at his game log, and he's now out of the lineup, like I said, but it's like, it's disgusting. Like, his best game was opening night. He had 15 points on 10 shots. That was his best game. Like, by far, he's averaging 9.9 points per game. And his shooting splits, they read like a fucking padlock number. 36, 21, and 56. I don't know if it goes up to 56 on the padlock, but it's pretty close. It's a low number. Doesn't go up? Yeah, yeah.
Cheap padlocks, no. Good padlocks, yes.
Thank
go to
you.
60,
Thank
I
you.
Think.
Isn't that a good line? If, yeah. You know, if it is, in fact, correct. Do they? Maybe the good ones do go up to 60 or something like that. But anyway, it's just... it's shocking. I don't think probably you guys have much to add to this. We thought he'd be better, and maybe it was the back, because he's out now, and he couldn't hit a shot to save his life.
Well, I think that's why this makes Michael Porter Jr. a really good one, because he was really awesome for the Nuggets after the All-Star game last year. 22 points per game, almost 8 rebounds a game, 56% from the field, 46 from 3, and 80 at the free throw line. The guy was almost 50-40-90 last year. So coming into this season, you're seeing he's struggling. But if the excuse is then that, oh, he's had a back injury this whole time, that's not the excuse you want to hear if you're the Nuggets.
No.
After you just signed him to a huge deal, right? So you're like, okay, maybe there's a reason for it. It would be the last reason we would possibly choose. So, yeah, tough start to the season for Michael Porter Jr. And, you know, hopefully this contract doesn't turn into an albatross right away.
Yeah, hopefully not. Hopefully he comes back
healthy. Totally. And I said it when, you know, when he got injured a couple of weeks ago, I went back and looked at that contract and wondered, is it mimicking Joel Embiid's contract, which has protections for his injuries that that he'd always had? And it doesn't. And looking more into it, apparently there was some negotiation about it, but those were the rumors, but it didn't get included. And I'm not sure if the Nuggets are going to be paying for that long term, but yeah, hopefully he gets right. I'm sure they did their due diligence anyways, medically, as all teams do. So hopefully he's right soon, because yeah, I mean, the guy is butter. It must be his back. I'm blaming his back.
Who did you guys have for most improved? Did anybody take Michael Porter Jr. here on the show?
I did.
Yeah, did you?
I might have. I don't remember. It's so long ago.
I took Nikhil Alexander-Walker. Lee, who did you take?
I think I ended up taking Tybal, but I don't know if I changed that or not in the end. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, at number one on my most disappointing players to start the season list here, I'm going Damian Lillard. Just because it's really weird to have a 6-time All-Star, 6-time All-NBA, a guy that was just named to the NBA's 75th anniversary team, for crying out loud. It's really weird to have that player that we know turn into basically a glorified Devonte Graham. That doesn't sit right with me. Facts. He's averaging 20.6 points per game. He's shooting 39% overall and 28% from distance. And his free throw has been cut in half. He just does not get there all that often anymore. And I don't really think that's because of, like, the rule changes, so to speak. It's just, I don't know. So, Lillard is at number one here on my list, Lee. Again, just because of we know this guy's, like, a 30-point-per-game scorer, and it's been strange to see him struggle, in addition to his team not looking all that great, playing below 500 right now.
Yeah, he would have been my number one, too, because he is much better than what we're seeing from him right now. But also, there's a lot of stuff going on in Portland, a new coach, off-court situation. Lillard, just maybe, you know, this the off-season speculation about his future as well is affecting him, perhaps, because this is kind of what Daryl Morey wants, is a star struggling, so maybe that deal can be had. I don't think it happens, but Lillard hasn't had that that ability yet to really just drag the Blazers to a few convincing victories, which we know he can do. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're kind of middling. And this is the whole reason why I want Lillard to be in a different situation. It doesn't guarantee he's going to win a championship, but I just think his time in Portland isn't going to get any better than it's been so far. And certainly the way that he's struggling so far this season makes you think that this season they're not going to be able to turn it around. They just won't. I just don't like that roster. And until he really shakes off this rust, the Blazers are going to be a middling team at best.
Mm-hmm. So there it is. Those are my top 10 most disappointing players. Now, I see a lot of people in the stream team a little shocked maybe that I don't have James Harden in the mix. Sure, you could if you want to. I think he started to turn it on as of late. So I think you're sort of stuck on maybe the first week or two storylines there, in my opinion. But yeah, he hasn't been great. He hasn't been like a top 75 player of all time either. Other names, the old, what about this guy? Let's do it. Why not? talking Blazers or sticking with Blazers. You know, I had Lillard at number one. Nurkic has been disappointing. could be in the mix. Clint Capella, Trey, you've brought him up a number of times on this show already with the Hawks. He just sort of seems out of it and has not played like he did last year for Atlanta, for sure.
No Duncan beefs. Robinson,
what's that? No beefs, yeah.
No beefs for Capella.
Duncan Robinson has struggled just with his three-point shot. I mean, he's a specialist, and he's paid to hit threes, and for the most part, pretty early on there, he couldn't hit one, at least not to his consistency. Christian Wood got a lot of votes. I know that's a Rockets team that no one, like, cares about. But, yeah, you know, I looked into it.
Nice.
Yeah, it's disappointing, sure. I guess I wasn't as high on Christian Wood, maybe, as some people are or were. Derek White got some votes with the Spurs. I think, you know, DeJounte Murray has blossomed into, like, the real young talent there, and Derek White is sort of, like, sputtering a little bit. Kemba Walker, there's a lot of votes for him. I mean, he's hitting threes. Like, it's better than any Knicks guard has given them over the last couple of years. So I didn't include him on my list. Terrence Ross, another guy, you know, I just think the hope, I think the magic hope that he would, like, that he would play like he did last year and then they could trade him for something. And he's been bad. But any other names you guys want to throw out there that you want to say, what about this guy? He's disappointed me.
A lot of good names there.
Yeah, okay. Good. I will say Dame.
You did. I will say Dame is playing better of late. I know it's sort of gone under the radar, but last four of his last five games, shooting nearly 50%,
yeah.
So 47% or higher, which would be a career high. I think he's coming on. He's feeling it. I was encouraged by Jason Tatum, too, his second half against the Cavs. He was more like a fulcrum of the offense, and Jared Weiss wrote about that recently. Maybe he can be back to doing that. I'm hopeful that he can, you know, use all that gravity and pick up some other guys. But I'm worried about this this Blazer situation. What's going to happen with Dame? So that's what I'm looking at. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you can name another guy there, Skeets. You named.
Well,
you had some good ones.
Yeah.
I would add Anthony Davis, I think, is a weird call on this one just because it looks like he's happy to be the number two to LeBron or to Westbrook, depending on who's kind of leading the charge for the Lakers there. He just hasn't put his stamp on the season. At this point, I had him as Defensive Player of the Year. That seems completely far-fetched at this point. Both Devontae Graham and Nikhil Alexander-Walker are shooting under 40%, which is a large part of the Pelicans' struggles. And I was kind of eyeballing Trae Young at first because he had a slow start to the season, but suddenly he's scoring more points than he did last season. So it'll be weird to me if somehow Trae Young ends up not being an all-star again this year. Mm. He wasn't last year, but he was one of the biggest stories of the playoffs, especially against the Knicks, taking the Hawks to the Eastern Conference Finals. But it's possible he doesn't make the team if he continues to not put up massive, massive numbers.
Yeah, there was some love, I guess, if you want to call it that, for being disappointing. Westbrook, Kevin Porter Jr., you know, this is a fun question from Sarah, actually. What kind of table do the most disappointing players get to sit at? The one in the back where the legs aren't even, the servers forget about you? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's more one of those ones where they say, we're going to have, there's about a 20, 30 minute wait for your table. And so you're sitting there and then you see like four or five other people come in and they don't have to wait. They seem to get the table ahead of you. And you're like, has this dude forgotten about me or something? What's going on out here? And you have to go out to the waiter and he's like, oh, yeah. How many was it?
Right.
Four? Give us another 5 or 10 minutes. You know, you're just like overlooked there. So,
it's definitely near the bathroom too.
Yeah.
Or you got like a cable leg in your crotch.
Oh. Yeah, that's horrible too. So there it is. Anyway, my top 10 most disappointing players. Agree or disagree, let us know. I know you already are in the stream team, but drop your comments below the video on YouTube or tweet at us at No Dunks Inc. We're going to take one more break. When we come back, JD's got Tweet of the Night, got Pick'em results, and a little bit more. Don't go anywhere.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
All right, back with No Dunks. Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, Tweet of the Night. This popped into my feed first thing in the morning, so I was very grateful. And actually, Skeets suggested it as well. So it comes by way of Kelsey Lately, Kelsey O'Brien on Twitter, Kelsey underscore Lately, who retweeted from Ball Is Life, this player needs a nickname, and it's a picture. He's an unnamed guy. I tried to find out who it was, but he has a glorious mullet.
Yeah.
It is absolutely stunning. And it looks like you can play. I don't know.
It looks decent, I guess.
We're seeing some highlights from this gentleman here. Again, I have no idea who it is. He plays for the Knights.
Wow.
And, you know, he's... look at that. It's
look
just
at that
beautiful.
Shot. Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
Oh, my goodness.
So Kelsey had a nice little run of puns. You know how we love puns around here. So
yep.
She contributed Billy Ray Allen.
Yep.
Billy Ray Allen.
Yeah, that's great.
Isaiah Joe Dirt. I don't really get that one.
There's a basketball player named Isaiah Joe.
Yeah.
Oh, there is a player named Isaiah. Okay. Cool. And then the Fresh Prince of Bad Hair. I love that. But then... And then, whoops, where am I here? Yeah, sorry. So, and then she followed that up with, I forgot, Kenyon Dueling Banjo.
Keon Dueling Banjo.
Keon. These are all out of order. Yeah.
Jesus.
Anyways, and then she was, then she was trying to think of a DeMarcus Cousin one, and then I already stepped on the joke. DeMar kissing cousins is great. That's from Jay Wilb, and she retweeted that. I'm going to add Grant Hillbilly into the mix. Chris Mullen.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Nice.
Does that work?
Yeah,
Chuck Norris.
Like, I like Chris Mullen, actually.
Yeah, okay. It's pretty good. Trashy McGrady. It looks better on paper.
Okay. All right.
I don't mind it.
Hulk Boban. Like Hulk Hogan, because he had a mullet, famously.
Yeah.
I know, they're stretching. I started with my best one, I think. Anyway, any to add?
What about Michael Redneck?
That's great. That's really good.
That's very good.
Good.
I like this. If he ever makes it to the NBA and gets a basketball reference page, he will be known as the Mullet Mamba.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
pretty good.
Yeah. For sure.
Young.
There was one other thing that caught my eye on Twitter this morning, and I saw that daylight savings time still trending. November 7th. Like, this a week and a half ago, people are
November
still
17th.
Like, what?
What? November 7th.
It's November 17th, but November 7th is when daylight savings time. happened. And look at all this. This is from this morning. And I just grabbed like a whole bunch of them, you know. Daylight savings has me dead tired at 6:30 p.m. You know, not a fan of daylight savings. Daylight savings whooping my ass. Blah, 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 blah. Guys, daylight savings ended. It ended on November 7th, 10 yeah, days ago.
10 days ago.
So you're complaining about time right now. Just regular time. I'm sorry it gets dark. I prefer it. You fall back. You get the extra hour. But you're like, honestly, we're not going to be okay. We're just not going to be okay.
Hold on. You prefer it getting dark at 5:30?
Yeah.
Here, you do? Why?
Because I get up at fucking 5:30 in the morning and it's light. It's nice.
Wow. All right. Well, you're an early bird.
Well, it's like, it's seasons, man. It gets dark. It's darker for longer in the wintertime. I mean, honestly. And fine, you complain about it the 2 days. You get 2 days,
yeah,
okay?
I agree.
2 days.
I don't, but yeah.
Ten days later. It's ridiculous.
You get 1 day of daylight saving complaint. Like, oh, man, daylight saving. Yeah, okay. Like you say, JD, it's time. You
right.
can't complain about time.
Brutal. Anyway, that's it. Sorry for the rant there.
Sorry, you got a lot of people on the stream team agreeing with you. Yeah, you're a bit of a temper boy, no doubt. I love it.
Is there a possibility there's somewhere in the world where they change this weekend?
It's possible, but I checked some of these profiles. They're in L.A.
Yeah.
They're like, what are you complaining about? They're Iowa.
They're complaining about it getting dark early. That's right. What they're complaining about.
As if it's the first time this has happened.
Well, right, right. That's the silly part. But, you know, you're right. The first couple days, it's a little shocking to your system. It feels like 10 o'clock at night, and you're like, wait, it's only 6 o'clock. Like, what's going on here? But 10 days later, if you haven't adjusted, then yeah.
If a four-year-old's going like, man, it used to get light later, and what's happened? You say, well, this is just the way it is in the world. They've got a reason to be like, oh, okay. Anyone who's old enough to have a Twitter account or be online, they've been through enough summers and winters to understand, oh, yeah, it gets lighter at some point of the year and it gets darker at the opposite end of the year. That's it. That's the way it goes. It's been that way forever.
Seasons. You ever heard of them?
Yeah. Why do they call it fall? Anyone know?
Just
while we're on it, I'll never forget my buddy Grish in Vegas. We're in Vegas for summer league. He goes, if anyone complains about the weather in Vegas in July, ooh, it's a dry heat. Yeah, no shit. What were you expecting out here?
Wow. Oh, man. Okay. Anything else, Lee? You're on fire right now. Hey, it's our last show. Make it good.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Make it a good one. Go out with a bang.
That's exactly right. All right. Great stuff, JD. Fun tweets there. Pick 'em results brought to you by BetMGM. From last night, it was a Warriors-Nets game. Brooklyn was favored by 2.5. I took them, and I lost. Warriors hammered them, as we talked about with Dan Grenfell there, especially in the third quarter. Just crushed them. So that's a win for all of you guys, except for me. Tass is 9-3. Really tidy little record here in the month of November. Lee improved to 7-5, traced back to 500, and I am 5-7. So I am a game behind TK, 2 behind Lee. There are a lot of games on again tonight, Tass. Where are we going?
I thought this one was a very difficult one. It's a close line. The Sacramento Kings and their tumultuous situation, visiting the Minnesota Timberwolves and their tumultuous situation. The Wolves are favored by 1.5 points, though, at home. And three of us riding with the home squad, I suppose, because howl with them. Skeets, myself, and Lee are taking the Wolves to bounce back after that disappointing loss to the Phoenix Suns, where they were up late. And Trey taking the Kings, who were able to give Luke Walton another day in the sun. Only from 7 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., of course. So good luck to the Kings and to the Wolves.
There you go. It's Fox versus Beasley in the disappointing bowl, too. Who will have a better game? That might decide who wins tonight.
This game has major play-in implications down the line. Yeah. Hopefully we get a leak from the Kings saying, if Luke Walton doesn't win this game, he's going to be fired. Because that is when they play their absolute best. But I am a little worried. You know, the sun goes down earlier, a lot more time for howling for those wolves up there, especially further up north. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. All right, guys, we'll call it there. Thanks again to our guest, Dan Grunfeld, for coming on. Email in your questions, both NBA and non-NBA related, to nodunks@theathletic.com. Go get yourself some No Dunks merch, especially with the holidays right around the corner. Go to nodunks.com or breakingtea.com/nodunks if you want to go that way as well. Get yourself an Athletic subscription or get one for your friends for the holiday season. Go to theathletic.com/nodunks. Speaking of The Athletic, Tass, you got a little something special coming up here in, what, like 30 minutes, do you not? You want to explain that for the people out there, especially in the stream team at least?
30 minutes. I hope it's 30 minutes. You guys talking time zones got me worried. I'm jumping on with Jason Quick, Blazers beat writer who's covered the team forever, to talk about everything going on off the floor and on the floor as well, with Damian Lillard, obviously, the investigation going into Neil Olshey. A lot going on with the Blazers. So, yeah, 30 minutes. Jump on. Live audio room on The Athletic.
It's on The Athletic app. Okay.
Yes.
So make sure you have that, right. And then you'll see Tass there with Blazers beat reporter Jason Quick. That's at noon Eastern here. But what is time, really?
Yeah, not sure.
Yeah, who knows? Well, great last show, guys. We'll do it again tomorrow. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, it is our final show, so might as well go out with a bang. I'm just going to howl. I think it's the best way to go out.
Embrace the day, people.
You could stay, every day. And I'd be happy every minute. It's been so long, but you're the one I've waited for. It's happened already. It's going to be groovy.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.